Welcome to the Depth Dive. Today, we're tackling a really core concept, the cost of capital. We're thinking about it as, you know, that absolute rock bottom return an investment just has to make, basically enough to pay back the investors, right? To make it worth their while and actually create some value.
Exactly. And zooming out a bit, a company's overall cost of capital isn't just one number pulled out of thin air. It's really a blend, a mix of what it owes its lenders, so the debt holders, and what the shareholders, the equity holders, expect back. It all depends on how the company is financed, its capital structure. But here's the crucial bit, and it trips people up sometimes. The cost really hinges on the risk of the specific investment you're looking at.
Not just the source of the funds.
Not just the source. You might find cheap debt, but if the project itself is super risky, the overall required return for that project should reflect that higher risk. It's about the use of funds, not just the source.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's unpack the components then, starting with what seems like the hardest one. The cost of equity. You can't just look this up on a statement, can you? How do you figure out what equity investors are demanding?
Right, that's the challenge. There are two main paths people usually take. First, there's the dividend growth model. It's pretty simple. Quite straightforward, especially if you've got a company paying regular dividends that are growing steadily.
How does that work, basically?
You basically take the dividend expected next year, divided by the current stock price, and then you just add the rate at which you expect dividends to grow.
Yeah.
The catch. It doesn't explicitly bake in risk. Not directly, anyway.
Okay. And the second method?
The second one. This is where it gets, well, maybe more interesting for digging into risk. It's the security market line, or SML. Approach. You probably know it as the capital asset pricing model, CAPM.
CAPM, right. That one does factor in risk explicitly.
It does. It uses things like the risk-free rate, the expected market return, and crucially, the stock's beta. Beta tells you how much that specific stock tends to move for the overall market. It's a measure of systematic risk. We saw that example, Alpha Air Freight. Both methods, the dividend model and SML, actually pointed to a similar cost of equity, around 14% to 15%.
Oh, interesting. So sometimes they do align, which can give you more confidence.
Exactly. When different methods converge, you feel a bit better about your estimate.
Okay, so that's equity, the complicated child. What about the simpler parts, debt and preferred stock? They seem more straightforward.
Generally, yes. The cost of debt is usually much easier to pin down.
Yeah.
You just look at the company's existing long-term debt, its bonds, and find the yield to maturity on them in the current market. That tells you the rate the market demands today.
So not the original coupon rate from when the bond was issued years ago?
Definitely not. That coupon rate is history. For figuring out the cost of new borrowing or the relevant cost for valuation today, you need the current market yield, the YPM. Mm. Using old rates is like, I don't know, driving, looking only in the rearview mirror.
Gotcha. Okay, and preferred stock?
Preferred stock is often treated like a perpetuity. It usually pays a fixed dividend forever. So its cost is pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
Just take that fixed annual dividend and divide it by the current market price per share of the preferred stock.
All right, so we have the costs for equity, debt, preferred stock. Now we need to combine them, right? That brings us to the WACC.
Precisely. The weighted average cost of capital, WACC. It represents the overall blended return the company needs to earn on its existing assets just to keep its value steady, to satisfy all its investors' debt and equity holders.
And how do we calculate that? What are the key things to watch out for?
Two main things, really important. First, always use market values for the weights. What the company's debt and equity are actually worth in the market today, not the value sitting on the balance sheet, the book values. Market values reflect the true economic proportions.
Right. Market values because they're current. What's the second thing?
The second is crucial. The cost of debt needs to be adjusted for taxes. Interest payments on debt are usually tax deductible. So that reduces the actual cost of debt to the company. You multiply the debt cost by one tax rate. It's a significant tax shield.
Ah, the tax shield. So the government effectively subsidizes debt financing in a way.
You could look at it that way, yes.
Yeah.
It makes debt cheaper on an after-tax basis compared to equity. Like in that BB Lean Co. example, when you put the market values and the after-tax cost of debt together with the cost of equity, you got that WACC of about 12.54%.
Okay, 12.54% for BB Lean. Now, here's a question. You calculate this overall WACC. Can a company just use that single number, that 12.54%, as the hurdle rate for every single project it considers?
That's a classic trap. And the answer is generally no, you absolutely shouldn't. It's actually quite dangerous.
Dangerous? Why?
Well, think about it. The company's WACC is an average based on the risk of its existing assets and projects. If you use that average rate for everything, you'll end up projecting potentially good, safe projects, just because their return is slightly below the average WACC, even if it's well above the correct risk-adjusted rate for that specific safe project.
Okay, so you miss out on good, low-risk stuff.
Exactly. And even worse, you might accept really risky projects that look good compared to the average WACC, but whose returns are actually too low for the high level of risk they carry. Their true required return should be much higher than the company average.
So it biases you towards taking on too much risk, potentially.
Precisely. It leads to poor investment decisions, which, you know, raises the key question. How do you adjust? How do you figure out the right discount rate for a project with a different risk profile?
Right. What are the practical ways to handle that?
Well, there are a couple of common approaches. One is the pure play approach. You try to find other companies, publicly traded ones, that are only in the same line of business as your project. You figure out their cost of capital and use that as a proxy.
Makes sense. Find a comparable specialist.
Yeah, find a specialist. The other method is more internal, the subjective approach. Here, the company basically adjusts its overall WACC up or down based on judgment. You might add, say, 5% to the WACC for high-risk projects and subtract 2% for low-risk ones. It's less precise, maybe, but often more practical.
So judgment calls based on risk categories.
Exactly. And one last point on project valuation. Don't forget flotation costs.
Yes. The costs of actually issuing the new stocks or bonds to fund the project.
Right. These are real costs. Banker fees, legal fees, printing, etc. They reduce the actual cash you get from the issuance. So you need to factor them in, usually by adjusting the initial project cost upwards slightly. It makes the hurdle a tiny bit higher.
Okay, good point. So wrapping up then, the WACC is this central vital number blending all the costs of a firm's capital and understanding its pieces, equity, debt, taxes, market values, and crucially, knowing when not to use the overall WACC is key for smart investment decisions.
Absolutely. It's about making sure the returns truly compensate for the risk being taken. And maybe something for you, the listener, to think about. If a company does incorrectly use its single overall WACC as the hurdle rate for all its projects,
yeah.
Which divisions do you think end up getting most of the funding? The riskier ones or the safer, more conservative ones? And why would that be?